We go first to a loophole as big as Yellowstone. Well, almost. It's a technicality that could mean getting away with murder. Brian Kalt is a professor at Michigan State University's College of Law and the man who discovered the so-called zone of death, a 50-square-mile section of Yellowstone National Park in which a person could hypothetically pull off the perfectly non-prosecutable crime. Brian initially wrote about the zone of death in a 2005 article for the Georgetown Law Journal and joins us now with more. Brian, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Loopholes in the law are usually pretty complicated. So can you walk us through this zone of death step by step? What is it about this section of Yellowstone that makes it different than anywhere else in the country?
Well, the key here is that the whole country is divided up into judicial districts. So most states are just one district, the District of New Hampshire. Some states are divided into two or three or more districts. I'm in the Western District of Michigan right now. Every district in the country is either a state or part of a state except for this one. The District of Wyoming is defined as including all of Yellowstone National Park, including those parts of Idaho and Montana that are in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem comes in with the Sixth Amendment. The Sixth Amendment requires a bunch of particular things for criminal defendants. And one of the things that it requires is that the jury in a case be taken from the state and district where the crime was committed.
Uh-huh.
So if you're in the Idaho portion of Yellowstone, you're in the state of Idaho, you're in the District of Wyoming, so the jury has to be from that same state and district. They have to be from the Idaho portion of Yellowstone.
And nobody lives there.
And nobody lives there. Compounding this problem is that because it's part of the national park, the federal government has exclusive jurisdiction. So there is no way for the state authorities to prosecute someone either.
Okay, so you can't form a jury because there's nobody actually in that district. So what happens? The case just gets thrown out on a technicality?
That's my argument. I'm not happy with that conclusion, but I think that the Sixth Amendment requirement is very simple here. Congress, when they set up the district, colored outside the lines, as I put it, and as a result, they make it impossible for a criminal defendant to have his Sixth Amendment rights respected. And we throw all sorts of cases out on more tendentious technicalities than this, things that aren't even in the Constitution, let alone clearly spelled out.
So you called attention to it to point out this loophole, not necessarily to inspire crimes, obviously.
Yes, I gave a talk to a group once about this, and my opening line was that I determined there are two kinds of people who think about how to commit the perfect crime. There are sociopaths who are trying to figure out how to do it, and there are neurotic people who are worried about the sociopaths. And I'm definitely coming at this subject from the neurotic's point of view.
How big is this zone, by the way?
It's about 50 miles, 50 square miles. And there's a similar problem in Montana, which the zone there is somewhat bigger. I call that the almost perfect crime because there are some people that live there, but not very many.
Has anybody since 2005, since you called attention to it, committed a crime here of any type?
Well, not in the Idaho portion. There was a case arising out of the Montana portion. And this was my concern in writing the article. I actually had it accepted for publication in 2004, and I asked them to delay publication until I could get Congress, hopefully, to fix it before the article came out. Congress wasn't particularly interested in acknowledging my existence, let alone fixing the problem. So the article came out, and I was worried about inspiring people. The one case that arose in Montana, though, was not inspired by the article. The defendant poached an elk that was in Yellowstone. He was, again, in the Montana portion. And once the case got going, his lawyer had heard about this, and his lawyer tried to use the defense.
So we're talking about the case of Mike Beldarain. He shot this elk in Montana in December 2005. His lawyer made the argument that he was in the zone of death, couldn't get a jury from that district. So what happened with this case?
So there are two provisions. Actually, there's another one in Article 3 that says the venue of the trial has to be in the state where the crime was committed. So Beldurain's lawyer said two things. One, he was in Cheyenne, Wyoming, before a local jury. So it's hundreds of miles away from where the crime was committed and in a different state. And his lawyer said, first, the trial has to be in Montana. Well, that's not a problem. They could have done that without letting him go free. The second thing he said was the jury has to be from the Montana portion of Yellowstone, which also was technically possible. There are some people who live there. The judge said that while that's what the Sixth Amendment would require, he said to actually do that would create a no man's land. And he said there's no case law that says that he needs to do that. He will dismiss the objection to having a Wyoming jury and proceed with the case. At that point, having lost on that and on some other objections, Beldurain's lawyer then got an offer from the U.S. attorney for a plea deal. And Beldurain pleaded guilty, and the plea deal was conditioned on him not appealing on this issue. He was allowed to appeal on any other issue that he wanted, but they didn't want him appealing this issue to the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, the U.S. Attorney's Office has sent a signal that they're afraid to have the Tenth Circuit review it. In this case, it involved an elk, and he didn't want to take the chance of going to prison for an even longer term by appealing this issue. But someone with nothing to lose, a murderer, say, would be able to take this all the way to the Tenth Circuit, all the way to the Supreme Court. And this opportunity to close that loophole beforehand was squandered.
So now it's been almost 10 years and still no fixes. Among those who have addressed the zone of death, Idaho Representative Mike Simpson and Senator Mike Enzi. What would it take for this loophole to be closed by the government?
I drafted some simple legislation. It just defines the District of Wyoming as including the state of Wyoming. And then the District of Idaho is Idaho, not Idaho minus Yellowstone. The District of Montana is Montana, not Montana minus Yellowstone. That's all it would take. Of course, saying that's all it would take overlooks how hard it is to get any sort of legislation through Congress, especially lately.
Hmm. I'm speaking with law professor Brian Kalt about the so-called zone of death. That's 50 square miles of the Yellowstone National Park, where Brian says a judicial loophole could lead to someone getting away with murder or another crime. He wrote about the loophole in a 2005 article for the Georgetown Law Review, and the idea was later adopted as a plot for a mystery novel called Free Fire by C.J. Box. We've all heard accusations of a do-nothing Congress, but this doesn't really sound like a partisan issue. Why would this be something that would be stalled or not even picked up in Congress?
The main reason that they haven't done anything about it is that they're focused on more important things. There isn't a series of murders in the Idaho portion of Yellowstone that they're responding to. So as long as it remains a theoretical possibility, they're much less likely to do anything about it. When the novel Free Fire came out, Senator Enzi, who's a fan of C.J. Box and of that series of novels, then took an interest in this. And so he approached the Department of Justice, and their response was they didn't think that this would be a problem. They thought they'd be able to get a conviction anyway. They didn't give any legal reason to reach that conclusion. They just made a practical argument. And if you look at the Beldurain case, that is what happened. Practically speaking, they were still able to get a conviction.
I did read that Mike Simpson, he's a Republican from Idaho, congressman from Idaho, still in office. When asked, a spokesperson from his office said, didn't think the zone of death was a problem and argued that we could count on, quote, checks and balances to remedy the issue should a murder be committed. What does that reveal about the respective congressman's understanding of this law?
You know, it's been several years since I read that line, and I still don't know what they meant by checks and balances. I think the idea is the courts will find some way to convict someone anyway. And that's not checks and balances. That's the opposite of checks and balances, right? The court is supposed to protect the Constitution from statutes that violate it. They're not supposed to protect prosecutors from the Constitution. So that was baffling to me. But the first part of that, the checks and balances part, didn't bother me nearly as much as the second part. They said checks and balances would remedy the issue should a murder be committed. If a murder has been convicted, checks and balances or whatever part of the process you rely on to get this conviction, that doesn't remedy the issue, right? The issue is someone has been murdered and there's no way to remedy that.
Brian Cald, you're a law professor. How would you advise your students who came to you saying, I found this technicality in the law, this loophole that could allow somebody to get away with something. I'm thinking about publishing something on it. How would you advise them?
Well, I would tell them to not count on Congress or the state authorities, if it's a state loophole, to fall all over themselves to remedy proactively some hypothetical problem. I would tell them to prepare themselves to be blamed if anyone puts their theory into practice. And I would tell them to seriously consider not publishing it until they've at least tried to get it fixed. I published this because, despite the fact that I hadn't gotten it fixed, because I didn't think that someone was so likely to put theory into practice that it was creating a clear and present danger. That said, it does keep me up at night sometimes thinking it's just a matter of time before someone is inspired by this to go out and do this. And I can sort of console myself in the notion that maybe eventually someone else would have discovered it and published it, but that's not really an answer. So if I had it all to do over again, I'm not sure I would publish this.
Brian Cald, thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Brian Cald, a law professor at Michigan State University School of Law. He outlined the zone of death technicality in a 2005 article for the Georgetown Law Journal. It was called The Perfect Crime. Got picked up and turned into a novel. You can read more about it at wordofmouthradio.org. Coming up, how do you turn on the lights on the Sabbath if you're an Orthodox Jew? Does going to an afternoon mass on Christmas Eve really count as Christmas mass? Religious technicalities that keep the observant observant. That's when Word of Mouth continues.